Hello, hello, hello. Dr. Steve McKinlay with the Digital Ethics Podcast, coming to you from the apocalypse. So in this podcast number three, the final one for the week, we are going to be looking at the issues of responsibility and accountability and how they relate to digital ethics. And we'll also look at risk assessment, Don Gottebaum's theory of risk assessment. In particular, we'll go over Helen Nissenbaum's concept of accountability. Smart machine. So the final one for the week, guys, enjoy and do the quiz. Okay, so let's get into it. The first thing I want to talk about is a distinction between three different terms: responsibility, liability, and accountability. So each of these three terms have some implications, but there is a bit of a distinction between the three of them. So if we look at responsibility, first of all, usually there's two conditions that need to be satisfied for someone to be held responsible for something. The first one is causality, and the second is intent. So causality relates to cause, what caused a certain event to happen, and then intent is what was an individual's intent. Did they intend for something to happen? So there's an interesting relationship between these two things, because you can hold somebody responsible for something even though they may not have intended that particular outcome. So the example in the slides is that a person who, for example, carelessly left a campfire burning after you'd been camping somewhere, and then that caused a major forest fire. So you could certainly hold the person responsible because due to their negligence, they caused something to happen. On the other hand, you can hold somebody responsible for something if they intend something to happen, but it ultimately fails. So, for example, you would certainly hold somebody to account if they were planning to blow up a building or set fire to something and burn it to the ground, but they were prevented from doing that at the last minute, or it didn't end up working out that way. You could still morally hold that person morally culpable because of their intentions. So that's responsibility, the relationship between intent and cause. If we think about the term liability, this is a little bit different to responsibility. And it tends to be used much more from a legal perspective. And it's also used in a narrow sense of strict liability. So we're pretty lucky in New Zealand. We have forgiving sort of laws regarding liability in certain areas compared to the United States, for example, which has a high dependence on sort of litigation. So, for example, in the United States, if you were to injure yourself on somebody's property because of the design of their stairs, or you fell down their stairs, or you injured yourself due to something being broken, for example, on their property, then you can sue people in the United States. So we don't have this notion of blame in New Zealand that they do in the United States. In fact, in New Zealand, the concept of liability, if you injure yourself, for example, at the workplace, is dealt with the Department of the Accident Compensation Commission. So we're a little bit different. And then so we talked about liability and responsibility. Liability is used more in a legal sense. And then the final term, accountability. So this is where Helen Nissenbaum comes in, and she developed this notion of accountability as a broader notion that can be used in technology contexts or in software development contexts and so on. So for Helen Nissenbaum, the concept of accountability means that someone or some group of individuals or even an entire organisation, for example, is answerable for if some problem or harm is caused. So Nissenbaum points out that in cases of accountability, there will be someone or maybe several people to answer not only for malfunctions in life-critical systems that might cause or risk grave injuries and cause infrastructure or monetary losses, but also for malfunctions that cause individual losses of time, convenience, and contentment. So that's her definition of accountability. So there is a problem that happens in information, you know, not just in information technology projects, but in large projects as a whole. And Nissenbaum calls this the problem of many hands. So because computer systems are the products of big engineering teams often, or corporations, as opposed to the products of a single coder working in isolation, Nissenbaum says that many hands are involved, and this makes it difficult to pinpoint an individual that might have caused the bug or the problem that caused the system to fail or accidents to happen or personal injury or harm to occur. So this is a problem of many hands. One of the reasons that we have an issue with this and trying to think of assigned responsibility is twofold, according to Helen Nissenbaum. And that is that we tend to think of responsibility as something that generally only applies to individuals, but not to groups or collectives. And we also think of responsibility in exclusionary terms. So that means that if we think one person is responsible for something, then that means that another person is not. So this kind of gets tied up and confused with the concept of blame, and it's just a kind of a natural emotion. So what Nissenbaum is trying to do is break down why we need a broader definition of accountability rather than individual responsibility. And so she says that accountability is a much broader concept than responsibility because it's non-exclusionary, and it can apply to groups as well as individuals. So there we go. There's three concepts: responsibility, liability, and accountability. So I think a good thing to study would be to understand the distinction between those three, and then to also understand and have a read of, in more detail, Helen Nissenbaum's concept of accountability. I think it's you may find that in the revision questions once you unlock that section. So the next, what we're onto now is we're onto the second half of these slides, which is the concept of risk and assessing risk. So Don Gottebahn comes into the picture again, and the interesting thing about this is that Donald Gottebahn contradicts himself a little bit in this section, because he asks us to think of the concept of risks or ethical risks in software design, which really requires you to have a bit of an understanding of how ethics applies within a technological context. And this kind of, I think, contradicts his claim that we should really just rely on codes of ethics and codes of conduct. But anyway, I'll leave you guys to ponder that question. So let's have a look at Don Gottebahn's concept of assessing risk. So essentially what he is arguing is that our general concept of risk within software development lifecycle. So for any of you that have studied analysis and design, think back on what we consider to be risks within software development projects, and they generally don't think of the ethical risks. We tend to think of risks associated with the project running behind schedule, running over budget. We think of risks of scope creep. We think of risks of the system might fail to meet the specified requirements. We think of risks of key software developers or key people in the project leaving during the project cycle, and so on. And we don't often think of the ethical risks associated with software development. So we don't tend to build in a concept of risk assessment from an ethics perspective. And Gottebahn argues that we should do this. He argues that we have this narrow concept of risk associated with projects, mostly related to monetary kind of issues and project management issues. And he argues also that we have this limited notion of system stakeholders. So we think of system stakeholders in terms of, you know, the financial contribution to the project, who's the project champion or sponsor, who are the users, and so on. And he argues that this is a relatively limited notion. So just summing up, he argues that our model for risk assessment and software development is based solely on cost effectiveness, right? So in terms of the budget, the schedule, and so on. And he argues that this is not adequate, right? He thinks that we need to expand the key risk factors to include social, political, and ethical considerations. And I think that's a pretty fair call from him. So I think I'll leave it there. Or what I'll do is let you guys read the text, the stuff that Don Gottebaan talks about in terms of risk assessment. There's a bit more detail in the text. And I think we'll just sum up this podcast by just talking about special moral obligations that certain computer corporations have. So, you know, we could think that, you know, lots of computer corporate organizations have special moral obligations. But there are some companies that seem to have a higher level of moral obligation. And in the text, Tavani points out a couple of different companies. One is search engine companies. So, you know, companies like Google and so on. He argues that they have certain special moral obligations. And another one, the other one, which is fairly obvious, is companies that develop autonomous systems and robots. And I would argue now we could even add in organizations that are getting involved in the development of artificially intelligent decision-making systems. So AI decision-making support systems, predictive modeling systems, and so on. These are companies that seem to have special moral obligations. So why is this the case? Well, in the text, Tavani quotes a guy called Hinman. In 2005, Hinman argued that search engine companies are the gatekeepers of the web, the World Wide Web. And because of the special or privileged role, he argued that the major search engine companies should shoulder significant social responsibility. And he gives four main reasons. So these are Hinman's four main reasons that search engine companies have special responsibilities. First of all, one, they play a crucial role in access to information. So without them, the World Wide Web to most people would be almost inaccessible and therefore pretty much useless. Two, they give us access to information that's crucial for responsible citizenship within democracies. And so this brings up the issue of fake news and so on that's come up in the media a lot these days. And you could argue that search engine companies and maybe social media companies social media companies like, for example, Facebook have a responsibility to ensure that, you know, information is true and so on. And then three, they are central to education. So, and I'm sure you guys all agree with this. I wonder how many of you guys have actually visited the library. Okay, we're in lockdown at the moment, so you're going to have to rely on Google. But this is Hinman's argument that search engines are very crucial to education these days. So that's a special privileged role, and moral obligation comes along with that. And then finally, the last one, which is really important as well, is that search engine companies are private companies. Google's a private company, right? And private companies are businesses that mostly are interested in making a profit. So that's search engine companies. And then let's just very briefly talk about companies that develop autonomous systems. So by autonomous systems, we might mean driverless cars, for example, unmanned vehicles, killer robots on the battlefield, autonomous robotic surgery devices. They don't discuss this in the text, but there's two kind of ways we can think of autonomous systems. We can think of autonomous systems with a human in the loop. So a human in the loop means that there's a human that ultimately makes the decision in conjunction with the autonomous system. And then there are autonomous systems with humans outside the loop, right? So the autonomous system completely makes the decision itself. And there's a lot of work that's been developed to develop autonomous weapon systems by many nations around the world. And if you look up, if you do a Google search on campaign to ban killer robots, you'll find that there's an organization in Washington, D.C., which is actually headed up by a friend of mine, Mary Wareham, and she has she wants this international moratorium on the development of autonomous weapon systems. A little bit later in the course, I'll talk about that. I gave a paper at Stanford University a couple of years ago on the ethics of autonomous weapon systems, and we might have a look at that as part of this course. It's kind of interesting. So basically the bottom line is that companies that develop these types of systems, and I would also add in predictive data modeling systems, they have a lot of social, legal, and ethical issues around them. And I'm not going to get into that in too much detail. We'll talk about this in a lot more detail a little bit later in the course, but I just want to raise that issue as definitely an ethical issue related to professional ethics. So we're at the end of this final podcast for this week. My apologies for the delay in getting it up. It was a little bit later than I anticipated, but I had an ethics committee meeting this morning, Monday morning, with the Open Polytech of New Zealand, and I had to attend that. So my plan was to finish this by mid-morning, but anyway, it's done now. A little bit over 16 minutes. Hope it's not too long, and I hope you enjoyed it a little bit. And get into the exercises. Try and finish the quiz if you can. I will mark everyone that opens and attempts that quiz and these podcasts as attended at the end of this week, so by Sunday afternoon. So good luck with your studies, guys. Feel free to send me an email. Ask questions in the forum if you like. Look forward to your engagement. And see you next week.